stop number 5 of the Waterski Pro Tour, Louisiana Night Jam. This is Trent. I'm joined this week by runner-up, second-place finisher of Louisiana Night Jam, Taylor Garcia. Taylor, I know that this event in particular holds a special place for you. What? Tell me about Louisiana Night Jam. What you know, and why it's why you attend, why you go to Louisiana, jump in the pitch black in the middle of the night. What drives you to do it?
So there's a few things. I grew up watching the LA Night Jam, and yeah, it was the first night jump I ever. Jay let me jump as a junior to kind of forerun the open mid event, and wow. So this event, I've watched it. I skied it the first one. It's my first night jump. It has a very special place to me, and it's really awesome for me to get to now come and jump in this event as an open min and compete for placement and walk away with that second place. Congratulations to Jack on that. But yeah. It is just, for me, it's kind of, I watched it growing up. This is what I always wanted to do, and I'm getting to do it, and it's amazing.
Yeah, no, it was. And you had a big weekend. 227 in the prelims, did you go?
Yep. Got a 227 under my belt. Pretty happy. The conditions during the day were a little hit and miss, but
they were.
That lake is just so dang good that you can make big scores happen there pretty comfortably, even when the conditions aren't spot on.
Yep. 227 in the prelims. So you were second seed going into the finals. So walk me through the finals here a little bit. It was, you know, if you watched it on webcast, you'll know. If you haven't, go back and watch the highlight reels on the Waterski Pro Tour webcast. But, you know, it was the finals. I mean, it was insane. It was intense. But as a slalom skier, I'm just like, oh my gosh, man. Like it was a lot to handle. Like, Dorian goes out, second off the dock, I believe. 220, like big jump, follows up, you know, unfortunately takes a really bad crash. I know he's working through a bit of an ankle injury. I don't have full details. We're certainly hoping that he's going to be all right for the season. What does that do though? You know, well, before I ask that question, followed straight out, you know, straight after him, you know, there was a 20-minute delay while they, you know, they had to help him out of the water, you know, keep that ankle mobilized, and then Joel Poland goes out, follows straight up, and he goes out the back, you know, hurts his neck, takes up, you know, so two crashes in a row. And I'm, you know, I'm watching you guys and I'm watching, you know, at the intensity, just the focus, everything shifted a little bit from an outsider's perspective or from a, you know, from a fan's perspective. Tell me what's happening then. You know, you're on the starting dock. Freddy Krueger's on the starting dock, and Jack's still left. Tell me what happens to a jumper, you know, in that scenario.
I think you also have to take a bit of a step back and give credit where credit is due, because Emil Ritter, first off the dock, a 209 in the dark.
I know.
In a little bit of a tailwind, it was okay, but it wasn't great. He really went out there and set the bar, because a 209 in the dark is a score to be respected.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he put that pressure out there and kind of got the night off with, okay, we're gonna take some pokes at it tonight. This isn't gonna be just a clock it in kind of set. Like, we're gonna have to make this work. And then Dorian went out there and his first jump, 220 off the bat. He's like, all right, we're really gonna step
and
it
up.
Was we're going for it tonight.
And it was nice too, man. Like, it, I mean, it looked, and even, you know, and you tell me what you saw, but even, you know, the jump that he ended up unfortunately crashing on. I mean, from his setup, the speed he took through the turn, I was like, oh my gosh. It looked like it was going to be huge.
Dorian's not going to thank me for this one, but that 220 was a picture perfect pretty jump. It was easy. It was smooth. It was safe. That cut that he took on the out the front, that was his cut to just go to the moon and back. If he kicks that, if he's able to take that in, he is going to be down the lake, probably at the 230, 70 meter range. So
yeah,
bum that he didn't get the chance to connect with it. Horrible crash, and I'm hoping for the best for him, but that cut was going to be something special if you kick it. And that's kind of the edge we ride on with that. When you're trying to go 230, those cuts are, you're riding on the edge of, well, this jump's either going to be massive or I'm going to go for a tumble.
Yeah. So then, you know, obviously, like I said, Joel followed up with it, with another crash. So there's two in a row. Now what happens, Taylor? Like, I mean, does that, I mean, this is what you sign up for, and this is why you're one of the best in the world. But does the mood change a little bit, or does the, like, how are you processing this?
You definitely lose that little bit of fun, jovial feeling that we have on the dock sometimes, where it's like, we're all going big. We're kind of poking some fun, maybe splashing Freddie a little bit. He's the more serious of the group. Definitely the focus comes into a little sharper clarity, especially when you've got two really skilled jumpers like Dorian and Joel crash back to back. There's that little voice in the back of your head saying, why did that happen?
Yeah.
Is this going to happen to me? And you got to put that down, but I mean, you know how it is. Don't think about the pink elephant in the room. You're going to think about it. So it's definitely a bit of a mind game to acknowledge it happened, maybe learn a little bit from it, but then move on and play your own game out there.
Yeah. So what was your approach then? Like, so you would just, you know, you had watched Dorian 220, you watched Freddie follow the crashes, and then again, like, you know, straight out of the box, he hit another 220, tied with Dorian. And then, you know, it didn't really look like he was pushing too much, you know, like trying, like, and when he came back into, you know, when he came back in, hopped on the mic and he said, you know, admittedly, I was rattled. I was a little bit nervous, you know, having, you know, watching my two buddies crash, you know, he said, I got a 220 on the board and that's all I wanted to do that day. After, you know, seeing what happened. So what's your game plan then? Like, you know that you've got to go big for a night jump. So how did you approach that set? Cause you know, it was impressive to watch.
I definitely made a slight mistake that set in that I decided to kind of, as Dorian did on his third jump, to go try and take my 230 foot cuts for jump one and jump two. And that put me into a pretty stressful situation for jump three coming in. I think my best score at that point was like a 155.
Yeah.
Into the third jump of a night jump final at a pro tournament. Wasn't exactly the situation I was looking for. For me, I'm pretty good with a short-term memory. So I acknowledge what happened to them. I was upset for them. I was hoping that they were going to walk away okay. But the crashes were pretty far out of my mind by that point. What was in my mind was the score I needed and the fact that 220 was the bar, but I've got Jack coming behind me who's jumping amazing, and I know he can go further. I know Freddie could have gone further. I knew it was the going out there that I needed to put a big score on the board to put some pressure on Jack and kind of put me myself in a bad spot with those first two jumps and wasn't able to really put one out there for him. But I don't think for me, the crashes played a major role in my overall plan or attitude during the set.
Yeah. I mean, it's what you do. But you know, again, from a slalom skier's perspective, it shook me. So it was wildly impressive to watch, you know, what you and Freddie and then ultimately Jack were able to do. Amazing event. So the way it shook down on the women's side of things, in third place was Valentina Gonzalez, 157. Sasha, I'm going to try this, man. You tell me if I'm wrong. Danishakaya?
Close enough. I'm not going to try either on a recording.
So she ended up in second place with 159. And then Hannah Straslova, 175. And that's a big jump in the dark, you know? she went 184 in the prelims. And that was, you know, all five of the girls jumped insane. But that, you know, she put herself a long ways ahead of the pack with that jump. It was impressive to see.
Well, and also one thing you got to remember with the girls, and yes, Hannah's jump was impressive, especially in the dark, but the guys, this is our second night jump of the year. If you've gone to Moomba, it's our third night jump of the year. Yeah, we get a lot of practice in the night jumps.
Good point.
Historically, the girls have usually been either pulled in the dusk or during the day, so they haven't really had as much time to get dialed in, get comfortable. I know exactly what I'm going to feel in a night jump from the 600 to my landing. I know what's coming. I've done it many, many times now. So I'm very comfortable to take the exact same cut I take during the day in the dark.
That's something I wanted to ask you, because you are one of the best at this, you know, and talking to your dad this weekend, you know, he just conveyed to me, like, you know, he's like, they all like it. He said, some of them love it. He said, but Taylor loves this. So what do you, and you kind of just brushed on it, but do you alter your approach at all? Or do you just, you know, you just accept your surroundings and jump as if it was full daylight?
I if I could never do another tournament during the day and it was only going to be night jumps for the rest of my career, I would jump up and down with joy. It is the most fun I have on the water at any time.
It's insane.
But the one thing I've learned is I cannot change a thing. Because when you change things and you adjust for the circumstances, you push yourself outside of the comfort zone, your feelings, your timings, and in the dark, when you can barely see the wake, you can barely see the ramp, you can't see the landing, your timing and your natural reactions are everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's impressive to watch for sure. So, and then on the men's side of things, you know, we've already said, but Freddy Krueger, 220 in third place, Taylor, you know, with the same jump of 220 feet in second. And that's two weekends or two jump tournaments in a row, or two night jumps in a row that you finished second with 220 feet, correct?
Yep. Yep. I'm keeping that nice and warm.
Yeah. Yeah. Insane. And then Jack Critchley, 222. For the Louisiana LA Night Jam champion. So just quickly, you know, checking in on the leaderboard. In third place, 45 points, Regina Jaquist keeps showing up. You know, it's impressive how she'll, you know, she probably had seven sets on Saturday between the head-to-head slalom and all the rounds of jumping. Sasha in second place, 60 points, and then just 8-point separation between her and Hannah, who's in first place with 68. On the men's side of thing, leaderboard, Jack Critchley bumped himself up pretty well after that win, 86 points. Taylor, you're sitting in second place on the leaderboard, 96 points, with just the tiniest margin, Freddy Krueger 4 points ahead of you. Where is the next jump event for you guys?
Ooh, that is a really good question. I'm not entirely sure.
In terms of the pro tour, I think the next one probably will be California.
I think you're right. So I'm excited for that one. I get to go kind of back to born and raised.
Yeah.
Get back out into California and do some jumping. We haven't really gotten a lot of opportunities to go there, so hopefully can have some of my family come out and watch, some of my friends from when I was younger. So that'll be exciting.
Taylor, good job this weekend. The next Water Ski Pro Tour stop is going to be the Monaco Slalom Cup in France, coming up in just a little more than a week.